Welcome. My name is Todd Neller, and I'm a professor of computer science at Gettysburg College. I'm glad to be sharing with you on resources and recommendations for K-12 AI education. The structure of this talk will begin with me sharing different places that I look for high-quality AI educational resources. And some of those are applicable for K-12, so I recommend them to you. Next, I will turn to providing a different sort of description of artificial intelligence than you may have heard. And I'll talk about how that description encourages an integrative approach across disciplines. Finally, I want to encourage educators to leverage what you enjoy in order to promote better AI teaching. So without further ado, the first place that I would point you for AI educational resources and insights is a symposium called Educational Advances in Artificial Intelligence. This was established in 2010 as a primary venue focused on AI education. And these years it regularly has attendance of more than 90 people. Now, in the past, there have been many different venues on CS education, but this is the first large primary focus on AI education as a venue. It is co-located with AAAI, which is the largest general AI conference in the Western Hemisphere. Now, since the beginning of EAAI, we have been open to K-12 interests, but it's only been in recent years that we've seen a significant increase in the level of interest on K-12. In 2019 and 2020, we had panel discussions on K-12 AI education, but we had an entire special track, this most recent one in 2021, called Demos, Tools, and Activities for Teaching AI in K-12. Now, you may notice here that there are links that will be active in the PDF of the slides, but also I have a QR code on some of the slides to help people to scan from their phones very easily to get to primary websites on the pages that I'm discussing. So, also very important for you is the AI for K-12.org, the AI for K-12 initiative. Much of the AI content for K-12 has come from people who have been contributing to the efforts of AI for K-12.org. This initiative is jointly sponsored by AAAI and the Computer Science Teachers Association. And I would make a special note that at AIDE, there is a speaker named David Turetsky, who is one of the steering committee members for AI for K-12. And so be sure to see his talk as well. Next, I would highlight a session within EAAI called the Model AI Assignment Session. This session seeks to attract and peer review and publish the best assignment designs of the AI education community. It is the largest peer-reviewed archive of open AI assignments. And while we've been inviting K-12 materials for over a decade, again, there's been an increase in those in recent years. I have a couple of titles here, but there are more on the website that is linked. And so you may find some very helpful materials there that can be adapted for your classrooms. I would also note this is kind of an unusual recommendation because it has undergraduate explicitly in the title, and K-12 is up to, but not including undergraduate, the mentored undergraduate research challenges that have taken place at EAAI have been tracks to encourage college students to learn about the research process through AI challenge problems. Now, although this is oriented towards undergraduates, it's the case that we keep the materials for these challenges online after the challenges are over. And so there is support software and published papers and suggested resources for challenges that would be appropriate for students who know how to program, say, in high school. And so I would encourage people to look at some of the past challenges. And if, for example, students would get excited about programming a bot to play Gin Rummy, then that might be a really good thing to bring into your high school classroom. And to further support this, I would note that teams that I have coached for these challenges have sometimes included undergraduates who are in their first year or two of undergrad and have not yet taken the Intro to AI course at my college. And so you can find that students who have the same introductory programming background could have the same good experiences with some of the challenges that have been published here. I'm now going to turn my attention to the term artificial intelligence, a naming of a field that some have regretted and that we make do with. One of the reasons that it's a difficult name for a field is because it's ambiguous. It's not ambiguous in the artificial part. The Latin roots are very simple. Artificial means human-made, human-engineered. What's ill-defined is intelligence. We know it has something to do with learning, knowing, reasoning, but oftentimes it effectively means that someone is intelligent if they perform well on a difficult task, or software is intelligent if it performs well on a difficult task. So I'm going to pose two questions here and have you think about them, and then I'll present some answers and try to give you some insight as to where I come to my understanding of what artificial intelligence actually is. So first question, what do you call control engineering where stability proofs and such are impossible? So for example, for autonomous driving or piloting or vacuuming, we cannot do simple analyses of poles and zeros and Lyapunov surfaces that are common in control engineering. And so that work does not go on under the title control engineering, even if it is engineering controls. Similarly, what do you call database research where the data that's stored has expressivity and computational complexity beyond that that is normally found in relational databases? So the answers to these are not control engineering or databases, but rather robotics, a subfield of AI, and knowledge representation and reasoning, another subfield of AI. So AI as a computer science field welcomes work on any difficult problem requiring intelligence that doesn't fit other categorizations. Thus, it's appropriate to describe artificial intelligence as the really interesting miscellaneous pile of computer science. So, artificial intelligence is the really interesting miscellaneous pile of computer science. I use miscellaneous not as something to talk down AI or to dismiss it as unimportant and off the side. I said really interesting miscellaneous pile. It is the place that welcomes work from many, many different areas, but that don't fit those areas. So when a language that you want to reason about doesn't fit a relational database in terms of the expected computational efficiency or the corresponding limitations in expressivity, then it finds a welcome in the AI sub-area of knowledge representation and reasoning. And as long as other fields don't embrace ambitious, difficult problems, those problems will tend to find their way to AI that I sometimes imagine as being a giant circus tent with many, many different circles where many different enthralling acts are going on as people ambitiously go after some of the most interesting and practical problems of our age. So I love work in AI, but it defies characterization. It's not its own clean topic. And as such, it shouldn't be taught in K through 12 as its own separate topic, its own knowledge silo. Rather, it should most naturally integrate with and extend other topics. And one could also make the argument that computer science programming skills should be integrated with many mathematical topics. For example, when one is teaching probability, one should also be teaching how to write simple programs that would do Monte Carlo simulations and illustrate some of the concepts, looking at the central limit theorem, looking at other concepts computationally will enrich the education of those topics. And also, I personally wish that when I was learning calculus, that I had also been learning about how to program numerical integration and differentiation, because that would have significantly enhanced my initial learning of concepts of calculus. So I'm going to give an example of an integration of AI teaching that follows a continuum from basic probability and basic programming up through reinforcement learning. I'm going to do this with a game. I very much enjoy games and puzzles. They are a focus application area of my research. And so I'm going to introduce to you one of the simplest dice games that is still fun to play, and it's called the Game of Pig. You use a single six-sided die, and the object of the game is to be the first player to reach 100 points. So on a turn, a player takes a single die and rolls it repeatedly, again and again, until either the player holds, that is, stops rolling, and scores the sum of their rolls that turn, what we call the turn total, or the player rolls a one, called a pig. And if a pig is rolled, then the turn ends and there is no score changed. So you don't score any of your rolls until you stop rolling, until you hold, at which point you score those points. So here are two example turns. If on my turn, I roll a four, a five, and a two, and then decide to stop rolling, decide to hold, then I can add the four and the five and the two together to 11 and score 11 points. The points that I score, I never lose, but I only score points when I hold. If instead on my turn, I rolled a three, then a six, then a six, and then a one, a pig roll, then my turn ends immediately and I score nothing. So those are the simple rules to the game of pig. It's what's known as a Jeopardy dice game. Now, we can take simple questions from pig and we can pose them in the context of K through 12 teaching of probability. And the simplest question, what's the probability of rolling a pig, rolling a one, 1/6? On to more interesting questions, such as, at which turn total is one indifferent to rolling and holding for expected turn total gain? Put another way, at what point is the risk of losing your turn total balanced with the reward of rolling again? And this type of reasoning is what we call expect-a-max reasoning. So that's a more advanced probability question. And I have some other questions here. Feel free to pause the video and read them. But I'm going to sample some of the questions across these slides, and there will be some links to where you can find even more. So in an introductory computer science course where a student is learning to program for the first time, once you get beyond your variables and decisions and loops and you get to nested loops, at that point in the course, you can write Monte Carlo simulations for two computer players playing the game of Pig with a specific strategy, such as strategy to hold at 20. And when I say hold at 20, I mean hold when you have a turn total of 20 points or more. So for example, there are assignments that are published that are linked to here where you can estimate the probability of different hold at 20 turn outcomes with Monte Carlo simulation. Or you can set up a simulation of a two-player computer game with this strategy and estimate the number of turns that there will be on average in such a game. And this assumes that a player holds when they could achieve the goal score. Also, another Monte Carlo simulation exercise is to run that same simulation, but record first player and second player wins and estimate what the first player advantage is. These are non-trivial questions, but Monte Carlo simulation is a relatively easy technique to get good estimates of probabilities for difficult problems. Similarly, you can apply Pig to the teaching of the dynamic programming pattern, trying to work partial solutions to a complete solution. Retrograde analysis is another term for this, but one example problem is asking the question, what are the actual probabilities, you know, to the precision of the machine for different hold at 20 turn outcomes? What fraction of the time will you score nothing? What fraction of the time will you have a turn total gain of 20, 21, 22 through 25? So those are some ways that Pig can be used at the what we would call the CS1 course level. And there are other exercises as well in which this simple game can be used. Now, push this a bit further, and you're starting to talk about questions that concern reinforcement learning. So there are a different set of exercises that I've linked here, where you have questions that you can answer, such as, what's optimal play for Pig Solitaire, where a single player seeks to score G points within N turns? Or even computing, what is optimal play for Pig? For this, a person needs to understand Bellman's optimality equations, they need to understand value iteration, and as mentioned before, dynamic programming. But I will defer the details to the materials that are linked here, but these are not large programs. These are projects that an advanced high school student could implement. So I mentioned other different possible ways that you could integrate with topics. First thing that I would observe is that in statistics, we learn about what a linear regression is. I would say that a natural next thing is to learn how to compute a linear regression. And then we might learn what a logistic regression is, which has a strong relationship with linear regression, and how to compute that. As it happens, the algorithm that is most commonly used to compute logistic regression is equivalent to the algorithm known as backpropagation when you're doing neural network learning for a single layer neural network with a sigmoid activation function. So logistic regression can actually be a stepping stone to learning about neural networks. We don't normally think about AI as being integrated that way through that line of concepts. Also, in linear algebra, we learn about linear systems of equations early on, and we first learn to solve them through variable elimination. Later on, if we get a linear algebra course, we learn about Gaussian elimination, but we can also solve linear systems through what's known as iterative improvement. And I have a small demo here that I will show you. Here's a simple problem. Suppose there's a task to complete, and when Amy and Bob work together on it, it takes 2 hours to complete. But Amy and Cal can do it in 3 hours. Bob and Cal can do it in 4 hours. How long would it take for all three to complete this task, assuming that there's no cooperation overhead cost? Well, we can say that A, B, and C are variables that represent the work rate, how much of the task per hour is completed by each person, Amy, Bob, and Cal. And we can say that 2 hours times the rates of Amy and Bob gives us one task completed. 3 hours times the rates of Amy and Cal gives us one. And that the left over here, these three equations are linear, a system of linear equations that describe the problem constraints. And these can be rewritten as a set of linear equations with cyclic dependencies. A depends on B, C depends on A, B depends on C. And this can easily be solved algebraically with variable substitution. But this is not commonly known. It can also be computed through iterative improvement. Now I'm going to show you a small Java program here. And this program takes a unique approach. This is not guaranteed to always work for all linear equations, but bear with me here. I have a variable epsilon, which represents a threshold where change is so small that I consider my estimate to have converged to its true value. And I have variables A, B, and C where I have, you know, zero makes no sense as a work rate, but these can start at different values and this can still work. So I make some guesses. Maybe I make a work rate of 0.5 or 1 or whatever, but it doesn't so much matter in this case what we start at. And we have a learning rate, which is the amount that we're adjusting our estimates by with each iteration. So while the max change of each iteration is above our threshold of change, then we're going to compute new estimates for A, for C, and for B by taking, if the learning rate is 10% here, then 90% of the old estimate times A, our old estimate, 90% times our old estimate, plus 10% times our new estimate. Now, where does this new estimate come from? Well, this is 1/2 minus B. This is just the right-hand side of this equation. So all I'm doing is I'm adjusting by 10% my new estimate to reflect the right-hand sides of these equations. Now, if you've been trained with, in the area of reinforcement learning, you'll recognize that this is actually very similar to a common algorithm used in reinforcement learning. Now, for what I do after I compute the new estimates that have been nudged towards the right-hand sides of those equations with the old estimates plugged in, I recompute the what the max change is for this step. I make my new estimates be assigned to the variables A, B, and C. And when this loop has, when we've converged, it will then print out the solution and then use that solution in order to compute the answers to the question. So I run this, and there are the different work rates for Amy, Bob, and Cal, and the answer to the overarching question. So back to the presentation. Oops. Back to the presentation. If we teach that, then that algorithm is not dependent on the system being linear. We can use this with nonlinear equations. If we teach Bellman's optimality equation, then it's a stepping stone directly into learning about reinforcement learning, about value iteration, and other topics like that. So the final thing that I want to say here is to talk about teaching AI to your enthusiasms, bringing what you enjoy to the teaching of AI. This Venn diagram shows oftentimes what is an ideal for our work. We want our work to be about what we enjoy, about what we're good at, about what the world needs, and about what the world will employ, what you can be paid for. So again, these four are what you enjoy, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what the world will employ. And I would observe that the upper and left circles have to do with self. They're about intrinsic motivations. They're individualistic. The right and the bottom circles are about others, about the demand, the needs of the world, and the job market, what's employable. These are extrinsic motivations, and they're more about a collectivistic focus. And when we bring these together in balance, in harmony with each other, that center place where these all intersect is kind of our ideal for the best kind of work that we could ever hope for. And it's also true about our teaching as well. It's impacting effective teaching. Teaching is more engaging when you genuinely enjoy the topic that you teach. I've noted that AI integrates with many topics. So I would encourage you to integrate the teaching of AI with topics that you enjoy. Look for where AI intersects things that you enjoy teaching, applications to problems and areas that you enjoy. So an example of this, I would note that one of the model AI assignments is from Zach Butler. He's a professor of computer science at the Rochester Institute of Technology, and one of his favorite hobbies is orienteering. He created a project for planning human walking routes in order to illustrate A-star search and other concepts. He had students walking around collecting data on walking distances and slope and so on and so forth, and made a really interesting AI project out of that. I think that that's an example. For me, I tend to incorporate games in my teaching of AI because I really enjoy games and puzzles. Zach enjoys orienteering, and his enjoyment is reflected in his effective teaching of AI. So I would encourage you to do the same. In conclusion, it's difficult to create new AI assignment resources. So before you go and do that, see what's been created for you. Look in the different places, the different websites that I linked to earlier. Second, I would say that artificial intelligence is the really interesting miscellaneous pile of computer science. And because it defies topical characterization, it can and should be taught in integration with other K through 12 topics. Finally, as teachers, I would encourage you to find AI applications and topics that you enjoy in order to enhance your engaged teaching of AI. Thanks for listening, and I hope that this talk is of some help to you.